Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in the Star Chamber. This is Daniel Dark, and I am going to be taking a little bit of pressure off of my co-host normally, which is Stephen. He is having a few issues and everything tonight, health-wise and stuff like that, that, you know, maybe we'll see him next week, but right now and everything, he was needing a night off, so you've got me and Sandy Linder, which I don't know if you've ever heard of her or not. Well, heck.
Hello? No.
You don't have Sandy on here. We've got...
No.
I'm sorry.
Sandy's great. I'd love to chat with her. No, this is R.G. Westerman. I'm the Stephen Zimmer understudy for the night.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Archie.
That's okay. I'll take it as a compliment, though.
Well,
I will be confused with Sandy Linder any day of the week. That'll be fine.
And we have the one and only master of horror, Michael West, coming, you know, from up north.
Yay!
Hey, everybody.
So what's been going on with you two? Anything good?
Trying to get through the day. Can't go anywhere. Can't talk to anybody. Just trying to hang in there.
Oh, what about you, Michael? Anything promising coming up? Or?
Well, I've been listening to and... okaying audio for the audiobook version of my third book in my Legacy of the Gods series, Zeus's Warriors, which will be out later this year, and it's sounding wonderful. And then I'm just plowing ahead, trying to get the fourth and final book done. I don't know. I get in these weird. I don't know if either of you get in this position where it's like it's not really that you can't write, because you can go back and you can see a plot hole that needs to be filled, and you can come up with, you know, pages or whatever to fill that plot hole. You can take things out and put new things back in, but the forward momentum, the adding.
Mm-hmm.
The adding track to the end.
Yep.
That's where I'm stuck. So.
Well, you've got to get that one done before you start book five, so.
There is no book five. This is the end.
You say that now. But...
Oh, well, you know, it's like I'm down to one page of outline for this section of the book, and the last section of the book is basically just an extended epilogue. So I'm not worried about that. That I know where that's going, but it's just weird because it's like I know point A, I know point B, I know point C. It's the connective tissue I'm having issues with.
Yeah. That happens about every book that you ever write, though.
That's true.
And you always figure it out.
I do. So, I don't know. I just ended up giving a big section of... I'd hoped to have the entire final battle done and give it to my pre-readers as a lump, you know, with a beginning, middle, and an end. But I had a pre-reader who had a birthday this week. And she convinced me to let her be my second pair of eyes to see if she can help me, you know, unknot where I'm knotted up. So I'm curious to see what input she has, because she always has some good observations. So
do you have any spoiler alerts from the first chapter yet?
I mean, the whole, I mean, I really can't discuss hardly anything about this book without spoilers. So, you know, if, I would start, you know, if you have not yet started The Legacy of the Gods, now in this time of stuck at home, do nothing would be a great time to throw yourself into it. you know, it's available in print, ebook, and audiobook. Now, the first two chapters are available in audiobook, and narrated by S.W. Saltzman. And the man is amazing. I mean, you know, they talk about Lon Chaney being the man of a thousand faces. Saltzman is the man of a thousand voices. I swear. I mean, he's so good that now when I write these characters, I hear his voice doing them. I mean, he's that good. And just when I think that he's done just about everything he can do, another voice will come out of nowhere, and I'm like, oh my God, that's like perfect. So I mean, it's really amazing what he's able to accomplish and the canvas he's able to paint, just with my words and his voice. So it's really cool.
That sounds great. Sounds great. RG, what are you working on anything right now? Or are you?
Well, sort of. Yeah, I'm working on the sequel to Rising Ash. It's going to be called Falling Embers. I'm shooting for a pre-sale date of first Tuesday in June. I was planning on releasing it for the convention, Imaginarium. But you know, it's one day at a time right now. But I'm in the draft stages of the sequel, so it's fun. let's see. Yeah, I've started a new Etsy shop, which once Nate gets on, I'm going to talk to him about that a little bit, see how that's going. You know, since that's his thing too. But yeah, no, I have a new Etsy shop. It's called Apocalypse by RG. And it's like face mask accessories, since apparently that's going to be the hottest new accessory. So we might as well make them look good. So yeah, that's kind of a couple
things.
You got a
bling out face mask
there.
Now, huh?
Do what?
Well, you know.
You're blinging out face mask.
Hey, we might as well, you know. I mean,
you know, I was joking around with my wife the other day that, you know, I have a thing, you know, people, you know, may know this, that I have a thing for T-shirts, and mm-hmm. I have a lot of them. And within the last few years, I've also started to collect various socks to
mm-hmm,
go
yes.
with these T-shirts. And now over the last couple of months, I've started to collect various face masks.
I love it. Well, you should check out my store.
I should, definitely.
That's cool. Yeah, I'll send you a link. I'm all about this shameless self-promotion. I don't know if you guys have picked up on that yet.
Well, that just makes
why,
you know.
Why not? I mean, this is a place that you can promote and everything, because,
yep.
you know, if you don't toot your horn, who's going to toot it for you?
Exactly.
You can't depend on everybody else to
exactly.
do it, though.
Well, and plus, I heard a quote a very long time ago about, and I don't know, I'm still on the fence about how I feel about this quote, but it was something about the gold rush back in the 1800s, you know, everyone traveling to San Francisco, you know, that whole
mm-hmm.
time period. And it was that the people who got rich during the gold rush were the ones selling the sifting pans.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I mean, it blew my mind, because I was like, that's, you have to find the opportunity in whatever is happening around you, you know. And so,
right.
I don't know, for some reason that inspired me a little bit.
Yep. And, you know, one of the things that I've talked about on different occasions is, you know, saying that I listened to a guy a long time ago, and the saying has always stuck with me. The dogs bark, but the caravan moves on,
mm-hmm.
which basically
yeah.
means it doesn't matter what, you know, who's putting you down, who's doing this, that, and the other, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, barking at your caravan, you just
mm-hmm.
keep your caravan moving.
That's right.
And not worry
yeah.
about what the naysayers are saying or what anybody else is saying. So
right.
that is, you know, and that's basically
like
what you're
that.
Doing, RT.
Yeah.
You're making your caravan move on. And as creatives,
go, yeah.
that's what we all need to do. So.
Oh, Kendall Michaels in the chat room says, didn't catch it. It was those who were selling the sifting pans, the gold sifting pans that they used in the, yeah, there we go. Dr. Blackjack had me covered there.
So Daniel, who's our sponsors this week?
Well, the first sponsor that we've got is a young lady that I mixed up right at the first of the show, because I'm looking at the sponsors' names instead of, you know, who's actually on the show with me. You know, the one and only, the wonderful Sandy Linder. And we have a spot from Sandy that everybody really needs to listen to.
Well, let's listen to it.
You can get a head start for the online review tour of Sandy Linder's Move the Stars. The tour starts May 4th, but your reading adventure begins right away. Download Move the Stars for free through your Kindle Unlimited account, or order your print copy from Sandy Linder's Amazon page, and prepare to fall in love with the spunky shoulder dragons. Then don't forget to follow fantasy author Sandy Linder on Facebook for the full tour schedule, where you can share your review of Move the Stars.
Thank you, Sandy. It's always great to have sponsors and everything like her on here. And the second sponsor that we've got tonight is the weird one himself, Ren Garcia with League of Elders.
The League of Elder dares to be unusual. It's easy to be swept away in this bold and uninhibited landscape where fantastic heroes become old friends and sinister villains inhabit every dark corner. Dare to explore things best left alone. Each book is your lantern, lighting the path to a world never before seen. So what do you say? Are you weird enough for us?
Yes, Ren, we are weird enough. That's the whole reason that we do,
so weird
do what we do, is because we are weird enough.
We haven't even begun to be weird.
Not even begun it. So. We can show you weirdness that you don't even know about yet.
We put the we in weird.
Challenge accepted.
I try.
So, have either one of y'all read any of Ren or any Ren stuff?
We are going to put us on the spot like that. No?
Or Sandy?
I
read the, no. there's so much. There's so much indie work out there. It's like, I mean, they're definitely on the list. Both of them are definitely
yes.
on the list.
And I was hoping to be able to pick up some of their stuff, you know, at a show that we're, you know, looking at doing, but we don't know whether that's going to happen yet or not. So,
right.
Depending
we
on.
We will imagine it into being.
Yes. And if nothing else, we, you know, I hope that we can actually put on a virtual convention
yes.
in between now and then, too. You know, having people
yeah.
come together and everything.
Well, I've
heard
a lot
actually,
of people are talking about that. A lot of, I know, what's his name? Oh, gosh, he's going to kill me. The Clever Title Pending, Brian Morris, he's talking about doing a virtual con, and there was a virtual con like maybe about a month ago, like really towards the beginning.
Well,
I don't know how it did,
yeah.
but yeah. I've heard of that.
Yeah, we were in a virtual con what's the young lady's name? She was our guest last year, our keynote speaker.
Sally Ann,
thank you. We were on a virtual tour with her and everything on having a lot of people get together and doing everything from music to, you know, artwork to readings to just about everything creative that you could think about.
See, I didn't hear about that until after the fact, I think. Is it still streaming somewhere?
Get it online.
It was just everybody's.
Okay.
It was everybody's Facebook Live, wasn't it? Just everybody was doing their own Facebook Live and
just
going.
Me and Steven both were on that, doing Facebook Lives, and there it was just like, you know, a whole day of creatives, you know, showing their side of stuff on Facebook Live.
Yeah, that's
and
so
you just
cool.
went from one to the next to the next to the next one.
Well, and Horror Hound, which I always go to a couple times a year, they had to cancel their March con, and you know, as of right now, fingers crossed, the September one is still on the books. But what they decided to do was to, because everybody had already entered the film festival, everybody had all the awards had already been decided and whatnot. They were going to go ahead and show the shorts and the films digitally online, and at least have that aspect of the con, you know, have like an online film festival and whatnot. I believe that's happening the same weekend as the con, which was Memorial Day weekend. But you can go to horrorhound.com and get all the details on that. But that's you know, something that I've seen several cons either do or toy with doing, you know, because everybody had already entered, you know, these film competitions and whatnot. And of course, you know, everybody looks forward to the actual award ceremonies and whatnot. But, you know, this is what we got.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And one of the things that I was on Brian Morse's thing this morning, where he's doing a live Facebook and stuff, and found out about a new thing that he was working with that several other people have worked with called StreamYard, which you can stream on Facebook Live, YouTube, and other platforms all at the same time. And I thought that was very interesting. I don't know if either one of y'all heard of that or not yet.
Yeah, I have. Yeah. Been meaning to look into that.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's just StreamYard.com is the website. So
okay, yeah. Cause yeah, as much as you can, I mean, we almost have to multitask all of our social media outlets, because that's marketing right now. Is our little screens are the window to the world, really.
Yep.
Right.
And I just got word that our guest is on deck waiting to come on. And he is the one and only award-winning author, actor, movie producer, and now gourmet popcorn maker, Nathan Day. Welcome, Nathan.
Hey, guys. Can you guys hear me all right?
Yeah.
Got a little bit of an echo, but yes.
Okay, sorry. I just got out of work and I've got you on my my car phone. So, but
no problem.
Were you getting feedback on the show there?
A little bit. Sorry about that, guys.
That's okay.
But hey,
you're not the first one this episode, so we're good.
Okay. So how is everybody? Everybody doing fine? Staying healthy?
We're still alive and everything, so that's part of the thing. So we're able to be all here tonight. We
that's
actually get to
ahead.
Talk to somebody interesting besides ourselves, you know.
Hey, I called because you guys are interesting.
Like I said, besides ourselves.
You must not get out, Mike.
So what is happening in the world of popcorn, Nate?
I gotta tell you, popcorn, it's an exciting venture. You know, you take the corn, you pop it, you eat it. For those who don't know, I've kind of started an artisan popcorn company. I'm starting kind of small with a store on Etsy, you know, going to try to build it from there, then head on to a full website. But it actually, it's called Poplet Chalkhorn. And for any of my readers out there, if that sounds familiar, it is absolutely familiar because it comes directly from my first book, Orphan Surfaces. So, and the way this all came about was at last year's Imaginarium, I was trying to think of a way to just kind of do something a little different, get noticed, you know, try to pull people over to the table and, you know, kind of get my name circulating, the book circulating. And so I decided, you know what, I'm going to make some popcorn. I'm going to hand it out, you know, just not sell it, just hand it out, you know, with a little card attached to it and try to, you know, get people interested. And I ended up handing it all out and had, you know, people really seemed to like it. And I had a couple people offer to buy it. And I was like, wait a minute, is that something I can do? I can make money off this? What? So, yeah. So it sat dormant for a while. And then some of the people I work with, I can't remember how it came up. But I started talking to them about it. And I realized, I was like, wait a minute. I've got kind of a captive audience here. I'm going to turn these guys into guinea pigs and they're going to like it. Yeah. Whether or not they like it, they're going to like it. And, so I just started bringing in, you know, the popcorn to work, you know, to get everybody's feedback and help me kind of fine tune some of the recipes. And, then when lockdown hit, you know, I was like, well, I got no excuse not to try to do something with it now. So I decided, you know what, I'm going to take a risk. I'm going to push this online and see if anybody's interested. You know, I, like a lot of people, I got furloughed from my job and, so I, you know, kind of put word out there starting on Facebook and Instagram that, hey, I'm selling this. I'm not shipping it yet. I'm still getting all that kind of fine-tuned. But if you're local and you want some, I'll deliver it for a small fee. And had some people take it, you know, had some takers and got some good feedback and got some more sales off that. And just kind of took all that money and pumped it into getting, you know, like bag sealers and, you know, ice packs and, you know, different stuff to start getting the shipping together. And now I'm shipping and doing not bad, you know. It's not I'm not quitting any jobs, you know, soon, but
right.
I've since lockdown started, which I'm in Tennessee, so we actually are off lockdown now. I've made close to $400. That's not straight profit, but you know,
right.
I've had about $400 in sales. So it's done all right. So
yeah,
hopefully
that's
gonna grow. Yeah, you know, for a little side hustle.
You look at any business and everything, and, you know, they didn't start out making $1 million a month.
Nope.
Yeah. Right. Well, and I'm hoping, too, that once some more of the restrictions get lifted, you know, in proper time, and some of these businesses start opening back up, I'm hoping to kind of go in and, you know, partner with some of them. Like there's a local theater here. That I'm a huge fan of. Shout out to Central Cinema, if anybody who's listening knows them. Those guys show a lot of indie films and second-run films, and they're just fantastic people. They allow my co-author, Thomas Ward, to host his Southern Oasis Film Festival there every year. And so I'm hoping to, you know, I'm going to approach them with it and some of the boutiques here and, you know, just try to kind of slowly build it that way. But also, too, I'm going to start kind of piggybacking some of the books along on it, you know. So I'm hoping one can kind of help the other and vice versa.
Well, you know, what's
the shelf life on it?
Well, now that I've got the bag sealer, looking at probably about a good 2.5-3 weeks. So before I had the bag sealer and I was just having to tie them off, which is part of the reason why I wouldn't ship, you know, it was good for about a week. But now that I've got the bag sealer, it's definitely added some life to it. So I feel,
awesome.
You know, I'm comfortable shipping it.
Yeah, if you don't have, if you don't already have it, you need to do a book popcorn combo.
That's exactly what I'm thinking. The only reason I've hesitated is I have a limited number of physical copies myself, and I would hate to this is me kind of in la-la land here, but I would hate to open up that floodgate and have more orders than I can personally fill. So, but I definitely thought of that.
Order it as
Nathan,
do.
We have a person on chat right now that you mentioned just a minute ago. Thomas Moore
is that
on
Mr.
chat
Thomas?
Right now.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thomas Mizzy is in the hizzy.
I love you, Thomas.
I just said that
I love you.
Out loud.
For anybody who might be listening who isn't familiar yet with Thomas Moore, Thomas is an absolute fantastic filmmaker. And you know, like I said, my co-author in the book The Devil's Alive, which is a 1940s noir detective story. And it was actually Thomas's brainchild. He approached me with it. He made a short film that's essentially a prologue for the story, and he came to me with the full plot and asked me to kind of help him adapt it. So that's where that came from. But Thomas is an absolutely fantastic person. I got a little bit of feedback from you, but it sounds like you enjoyed it.
I did. I did enjoy it. I
okay.
really love a good noir. I really do. I'll save it till the end of time. The greasy detective, the femme fatale, the rain, the saxophone. I mean, seriously, it was so good. It's really good. If y'all haven't read it, listeners, you need to listen. You need to read it. Let's see. I'm actually pulling it up on Amazon right now to see. Yeah. But no, I heartily recommend. 9 out of 10. Do recommend.
Oh, wow. Thank you. And thank you for not giving it a 10 out of 10. 9 out of 10 makes me more believe your analysis.
I know better.
If you said 10 out of 10, I would, yeah, I wouldn't trust it. That's one thing I love about you, Rebecca, is you're honest with me about the flaws in my work, and I appreciate that because that really, nothing is going to help me grow like some honest critique.
Right, yeah, and that's all I want, too, because when people are like, oh, I love your book, I'm like, they're lying, you're lying, you're lying. But no, I really enjoy it.
If they give me a 1 out of 10, I'm pretty good with that, you know, because they give me something at least.
You're like, yes, I got a star, woohoo! Yeah.
Now it's Steve had told me that he wasn't gonna be able to be on tonight, but is he at least is he in the chat room? Is he listening? Does anybody know?
Yeah, he's listening
okay.
and stuff, but he's just not
he's
feeling
always
good
listening.
Stuff tonight. So
he's got
we
my
give him
mug.
We give him a week off
always listening.
Every 5 years, so this is his week off right now.
He's like Santa Claus. Even when he's not around, he sees you. He sees you when you're
sleeping.
Around. He knows when you're awake.
Just don't say his name.
There's nothing creepy about it.
The reason I ask is he had when he and I were kind of chatting on Messenger, he kind of mentioned that he wanted to address something I said on one of my posts, and so knowing he's listening, I want to do him the justice of addressing it. First off, if you're listening and you didn't know, Steve is an absolute warrior. The man just beats COVID over the head with a battle axe.
Mm-hmm.
He and Holly contracted it, and both are recovered and doing well. And
mm-hmm.
I can't tell you how grateful I am to hear that. So that's... You know, if any listeners were unfamiliar with that, just know that your man Steven Zimmer and Holly Philippe are both doing really well. So what Steven asked me to address was when I was doing some of my promotional posts, I addressed Mr. Michael West here as a demigod. And I wanted to address why I gave you the title of demigod and not full-on god. So,
how dare you?
First of all, now, I may not, Michael, I may not know you as well as some of the other people, Daniel and Steven, but I feel like I know you well enough to know that you lack, you have a serious lack of ego. And so if I were to just straight out call you God, it would just sound like I'm kissing your ass, and you would be like, all right, get this guy out of here. Usher, remove him. But in my opinion, if you look at all the stories and everything, demigods are infinitely more interesting. They're more relatable. They're mm-hmm. both human and divine. See? So, demigods just have better stories. I'd rather listen to hear about Hercules being a hero than Zeus being a slut, you know? So,
see that. Oh, wait.
So
you haven't
read
Michael's books, huh?
Hey, I listened to the audio of Cinema of Shadows. It was fantastic. I hadn't had a chance to read the book, and I absolutely enjoyed it. For anybody who's listening who hasn't checked it out yet, it's if you love like classic, you know, Stephen King, like the earlier Stephen King from like the 80s, the Cujo era. And if you love Dean Koontz, I mean, it's going to be right up your alley. It's great. It's got a cast that seems relatable and doesn't quite like. I'm trying to think how to put it. Like you feel like you've seen these characters, but the more you get to know them, the more they kind of differentiate themselves from the stereotypes, and you really start to kind of care about them. And you know, you're like, oh, okay, I'm really digging this. It feels like just a great homage to, like, 80s horror, and I absolutely loved it.
Nice.
Well, thank
that's
you.
Awesome.
Well, that's so, what Michael grew up with, was 80s horror, so, you know.
Right. Well,
that's the best decade for horror, too.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it's like, and that's my... that's my sweet spot for Stephen King, is the late 70s, early 80s. The pre-it Stephen King has always been my favorite. No, I mean that's not to say I haven't read everything the man's written since.
No.
But that's my sweet spot for him, is right there.
Yeah.
Well, see,
well,
the way I would sort of put
Cinema of Shadows, it's sort of like if you put Pinhead, Chucky, and some ghost stories together and said, let's make one scene of this. That's Cinema of Shadows.
Well, and it's got a really cool little opening scene. And Michael, I love how you wrote that, because it's, I love doing these openings that don't bleed directly into the story. You know, you kind of set up the mystery, you know, before you dive into the main characters. And I think Cinema Shadows really did a great job on that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and originally, and that opening was actually cut in half, because originally there were two aspects of the, basically it was going to, originally the opening was going to ping pong back between the protagonist and the antagonist in a way. You've got the antagonist being the theater, or the demon within the theater. And then the kind of, psychic individual who becomes the protagonist. And so it was kind of at different aspects of their life. It was going to ping pong back and forth. And as I got into writing it, I realized that the story of what happened to her as a teenager, it was better off being relayed by her, where you didn't see it happening. You were hearing about it from her point of view, but you were an outsider hearing it, and you didn't know whether you believed it or not, or didn't know really what to think about it. I thought that was much more effective than being in the moment. Plus I just, you know, decided that it was better just to cut to the action. And the other instance was another encounter that was relayed later in the book, was where the usher encountered the girl on the balcony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Originally, that was shown. That was a part of the prologue, and that was done through the usher's point of view. But I thought that, you know, while I wanted to keep that story, I thought it was better, again, just to, you know, cut to the chase, so to speak, and get into the meat of the book than to have this extended prologue. And I thought it would be more effective as kind of a later to have Robbie relay that story, where, again, you're hearing a story about somebody else. It's like a friend of a friend, and you're like, okay, do I believe this or not, kind of a thing. And then when you're if you're in the moment, you have no choice but to believe it, because it's, you're seeing it from that person's point of view. But but to hear these stories told secondhand, you have that, especially early in the book where you haven't seen all hell break loose, you have that kind of plausible deniability where it's like, I don't know if I believe this or not, but I like this person, so I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nathan, I'm going to change I'm going to change the subject on you real quick. What awards are you bringing home this year?
What you got? No, I'm just kidding. I didn't submit for the Author Academy Award this year. I'm hoping to have some stuff out to submit for it again next year, which, again, congratulations to double nominee Stephen Zimmer, both as Navigator and Raiden were both nominated. I have submitted both the Orphan sequel, Orphan Desecration, and The Devil's a Lie for awards at the Imaginarium. So, you know, it would always be great to come home with, you know, a couple awards. If either one of them won, I would love to see the Devil's a Lie one, because, you know, and I've said this 100 times, any, you know, podcast or anything I've been on, Thomas More has been such a powerful, a positive influence in my life that I would love for us to win that award. And that be something that he and I share, you know, just to deepen our brotherhood. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of weaknesses as a businessman, where I am very sheltered. I don't know a lot of what's out there, of what I should be going for, to be honest. I'll hear stuff around the way, you know, somebody saying, hey, you know, I'm nominated for this. And I'm always like, well, you know, what is that? You know, how did they find out about that?
Yeah.
You know,
you can be like Daniel and win an award and not even know you were up.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. which award was that?
The Poison Cup Award by Crime Masters of America for Knife's Tale.
Oh,
that's,
man,
awesome.
So you
won that award.
I knew you had won that. I knew you had won it. I didn't know you didn't know about it. That's awesome.
Yeah, I knew nothing about it until they contacted me and said, you know, what name do you want on here, and where do you want us to send this award to that you won? And I'm like,
if I got a call, I'd be like,
all year long, you know, I never was the bride, you know, so I was like, okay, you know, I didn't win anything this year.
Man, that's awesome. Even, you know, one of my biggest weaknesses, and this was something that, you know, one of my posts that I did over the last week kind of talked about how I know I'm not succeeding like I should be, but I know that it's my fault. I'm not out there, you know. My publisher for The Devil's a Lie, Tony Acree, with Enigma House Press, he was telling me that there was, once upon a time, he was doing about 33 cons a year, and that's how he built up his fan base. And now he just does the ones that he wants to do, and, you know, he does maybe 10 a year.
See, that even sounds like a lot to me.
Hold on, hold on.
What's happening?
Sorry, my car just decided it didn't like my phone anymore. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, sorry about that. But anyway, you know, so Tony had done, you know, he had done the groundwork, you know, he'd spent the face-to-face time to really build his audience. And that's not something I do very well. You know, I try to be, you know, I try to put myself out there on social media, but we all know how crowded that is.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, that's true for everybody though. I mean, like, yeah, I mean, you have to, and of course I'm the kettle calling the pot on the telephone, but I mean, like, it's, you have to push through, because that's like we were saying earlier, that's the window right now, especially with everyone being in quarantine and not being able to go out to the physical bookstores and, you know, not being able to see their friends physically. They're connecting through social media, and that's where the eyeballs are right now, you know?
Right. Well, exactly. And there are people that, you know, like you guys, I love watching what you guys do. In that, number one, Michael, every Thursday, I look forward to seeing a message from you that says you want to wish everyone a joyous Friday Eve. You're consistent. You know, you post all the time. You've got, you know, and your posts definitely show what, not just, you know, you're a horror writer, but you are first and foremost, I feel like, a horror fan. And it shows in your posts, you know, with like your memorabilia, the way your office is decorated, you know, the Ouija board, you know, rug you have in your office, you know, and
be careful how you walk across that thing.
Well, what's really bad is when the Roomba goes across it. Then I get all kinds of
oh my gosh, no!
All the, yeah, it's bad.
Terrifying. I'm watching you.
But then Rebecca,
he has a dog that
has
his pointer for his Ouija board, so you know.
Yeah. I painted the wall red, so I don't see him bleed anymore. So it's fine.
That's good. See, you learn to just live with it, work with it, and adapt. You know,
oh,
if
wow.
If the flies start coming out of the vents, the flies just start coming out of the vents. You just name them all and accept that it's there. You know.
I wanna bring something up real quick, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Thomas Moore in the chat room actually brought up something. He's talking about the local scene and how, like, sometimes as an artist, the hardest scene to break into, whether it's writing or whatnot, is our local scene. You know, people see us as, I don't know if this is your experience or not. I'm just curious what y'all's experience is with this. Like,
you know,
they see us as the waitress or
the
cashier or whatever. They don't see us as the artist.
Well, there's the old adage that the prophet is never accepted in his hometown. And, you know, it's, you know, and there's something to that. You know, it's like, you know, when people know you as you know, Nate down the street, you know, they're not going to accept you as right away as you know, some, you know, when they see you out walking your dog or whatnot, then they don't necessarily think of you as an artist, you know, or whatnot.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's.
I was going to say it's the power of the first impression, you know, it's because, you know, that first impression defines who you are in the eyes of someone. And so then the challenge becomes growing outside of that, you know, with, you know, there was, I met a woman at Imaginarium who, you know, we had been Facebook friends for a while, but I finally got to meet her in person, Imaginarium, named Laura Crawford. And I love Laura to death. She is the sweetest person. But she came up to me at Imaginarium. She's like, I'm such a fan. And I was like, what? I was like, hold on, a fan? What? You know, that just that word it just blew my mind. And, it's that kind of thing where, you know, Rebecca, you and I have known each other for what, 2 decades now, at least?
Yeah, about. Don't age us.
And,
don't tell people. We were 3 when we met.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. She was pulling on my diapers, and she regrets it now. So two decades and a lot of therapy later.
Right.
But but yeah, you know, like the local, you know, and every town, you know, has its local scene. I've been involved mm-hmm. in, you know, local music and local film scenes, both in Lexington and Knoxville. And of course, every local scene has a certain vibe. Even if the vibe is slightly different, there's a central commonality to it. You know, and you see a lot of people who are just constantly, you know, helping each other out. They're in each other's projects, you know, whether they're doing gigs yeah. together as bands or they're in films together. And so, you know, so a lot of people here in this scene, you know me as an actor. But, mm-hmm. you know, if you look at my Instagram, is author Nathan Day. You know, I'm not I'm not on social media really pushing my acting too much. That's because that's not what I love doing some acting. I filmed a little thing for director Kevin Wines this morning. Shout out to Kevin. And, you know, just something he's trying to do, like kind of a COVID challenge kind of thing. And, you know, I feel like because of that, when you're starting out in something new, whether it's writing or, you know, music or whatever, you always end up starting by getting your, you know, your friends who, you know, they mm-hmm. want to support you, and by golly, they yeah. love you. And hopefully they genuinely believe yeah. in you, because that support means everything. Mm-hmm. But
so is that how you became a hip hop singer?
Yeah.
Yeah, man, you know, I grew up on the streets, man. You know, streets are rough, man. You know, you just got to get out there, man. You know, you got to make a paper.
Main Street. Sesame Street, maybe.
We all saw your post earlier.
Too good to write back to his fans.
You actually touched on something just a minute ago, Nathan, that I want to come back to. Keep it real, y'all. you talked about like finding the people who you end up doing things for each other, like, you know, and like so-and-so's doing your cover and so-and-so's doing your soundtrack and so-and-so's going to help you with this. And like, to me, that's how you know you found your people. And like I know Holly is always talking about your tribe, your creative tribe. And like, that's like where the magic happens, you know. It's like I need a quote. Well, let me call so-and-so. Yeah. Maybe they can give me a quote. You know, I know that they've read such and so. They can give me a quote. You know, stuff like that. Like, it's this organic, magical, mushy thing that happens in creative friendship circles, and it's great.
I absolutely agree, but I don't want to go against that, but I do want to caution against settling into that. And what I mean by that is, Seven Star Press has some fantastic artists. And, you know, mm-hmm. all writers aside, I am so proud to be part of the Seven Star family. But let's just talk about artists. Seven Star Press has mm-hmm. some fantastic cover artists. However, when it came time to do Orphan, I did not see a cover artist that I felt could capture what I wanted. Now, So in that case, what I did is I went completely outside of the circle. I started mm-hmm. digging through DeviantArt, reaching out to artists out there, and was very fortunate to find Martina Stipin in Croatia mm-hmm. and had her do only Surfacing, but Orphan Desecration. And if you mm-hmm. Follow her on Instagram, she's constantly posting her work, and she's getting better and better. She's amazing.
Oh, cool. And
Thomas and I did something similar with Devil's a Lie. And so the thing I want to caution against is the comfort of staying inside that circle. Mm-hmm. By all means, be in that circle. Treat that circle as family. Mm-hmm. Treat everybody mm-hmm. with respect. Nurture each other. Support each other. But don't be afraid to step outside of that, because sometimes
Absolutely.
If you know sometimes you'll do something and you'll do it because you have the best of intentions. But sometimes you got to step outside to get right quote, or, you know, find that right person for
yeah,
soundtrack,
that spark,
like
yeah.
you're talking about. You know, you've got to make sure you don't limit yourself within certain circles. You mm-hmm. know, like I said, I'm very proud to, you know, have worked extensively with people in both you know, Kentucky and Tennessee, and I love that there's some bleed over now with, you know, with some of those people. I think, you know, keep networking, you know, keep trying to grow, you know.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm done. Go ahead. I ramble.
I was just going to say that that's like if you – part of being able to hear no is an integral part of being an artist. I have to insist. I will die on this hill. I've had too many people do like have a social media meltdowns because I left them a 3-star review. And, like, they blocked me. I mean, just all this nonsense. So, anyone who can take that or have someone say, you know, I'm going to go a different direction. Or, you know, any of those, you know, pretty ways of saying, no, I'm not interested in that. And yet you bounce back from that and, like, your friendship is not dependent on it. And, you know, I mean, that's part of it. I mean, we all have to be thick-skinned.
Right.
And like you mentioned earlier, accepting the feedback. You know, like if I came to you and was like, dude, that was life sucked. I don't know what you're thinking. I mean, I would never say that, but, but you know, being able to hear that from each other and there's like this, this undercurrent of respect that comes along with that. I don't know if I'm explaining
it right.
Advice that I always give to people who ask, you know, what advice would you give to a first time writer or a young writer or whatnot, I always say, you know, one of the things I always say is don't ask for criticism or advice and if you're not willing to take it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. Oh, my God.
It's like when American Idol first came out, everybody villainized Simon Cowell.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't take Simon Cowell, do not get into the music industry.
Nope. If you can't handle a boo, don't stand on the stage.
he wasn't nice, but he wasn't wrong. The other thing is too, you also have to learn to filter out between what is constructive criticism and what is a difference of opinion. Somebody can, you know, give you some great advice. You know, they're like, as a reader, this character didn't speak to me. They felt flat to me, or, you know, I didn't believe why they were doing what they were doing. You know, that's constructive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can learn from that. You can see the holes in your writing. But then you're going to have people who, like, when I directed Bullet Song, a friend of mine kept trying to get me to change the ending. And I was like, you know, he's like, it'd be so cool if I did this. And I'm like, but that's not the story. You know, I was like, I get why you think that. But and anybody who I talk to about how I do my writing is very much based on the characters. Like, I don't try to write out the scenarios. I try to let them kind of develop based on what the characters would realistically do. So I try to let them lead. And so when I wrote the script for Bullet Song, I absolutely knew, no, this is it. John dies. This is how he does it. And this is why he does it. And this is poetic and it makes sense. It may not be as cool as this ending, but it's the right ending. And I will, you know, put that on my tombstone. You know, I made my choice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you said, stand on your hill.
There's a movie. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Please.
I can't think of the name of it. It's got freaking Will Ferrell in it, but he plays a straight character. Like, he's not goofy and all this. And then the other person is, God, I'm going to, Kenneth Branagh's ex-wife. What is her name?
Oh, Lily Tomlin.
The other one. What?
Emma. She was in Harry
Potter. Emma Thompson.
Emma Thompson.
Emma Thompson. Yes,
yeah.
Emma Thompson. And she plays
this
author, and I can't think of the
fiction.
Name of it.
Stranger Than Fiction.
Yes,
She writes his life. Yes.
Yes, and then, that's great. I highly recommend that movie. But they kind of touch on that concept of, you know, writing the story as opposed to writing what other people want you to write. And, like, it literally comes down to
an important thing. I won't spoil it, but
yeah.
It comes down
well,
to a very important
well,
thing, and they have to make a decision.
Be,
yeah.
If you can't be truthful to your story, can't be real with your own story, and do that story, why are you writing it?
Right.
Right, exactly.
Well,
it, exactly.
And granted, I mean, you know, you've got your, and this, I guess, has always been the age-old, you know, dilemma. Do you write what's true, or do you write what sells? You know,
right.
are you James Patterson? You know, right? You know, just chalking out, you know, one co-authored, you know, predictable book after another, or sorry, shots fired, James Patterson, but you know, thankfully,
well,
I'm not on his radar.
Sometimes it's both,
but,
you know. Sometimes it's both, and that's where you know, that's
yeah,
a great thing.
Yeah. Yeah, some people do hit that sweet spot, you know, which is, mm-hmm. you know, my favorite author is Stephen King. And it's because of stories like, you know, The Stand and Green Mile. Dark Tower,
mm-hmm.
Gunslinger is my absolute favorite book ever written.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
And one of the things that I absolutely love about that was that Roland lets Jake die so he can pursue his passion. And it's such a little thing. But it spoke so true to me of his character. It made his character that much
mm-hmm.
more endearing to me, even though it just showed how deep his flaw and obsession was.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, so I think you're right. You can hit that sweet spot between the two. But
yeah.
I think the Dark Tower series is
a magical thing.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
so good.
you know, here's
yeah.
hoping the show that they're supposedly working on holds true, you know.
Oh, is there a show? Well, what did you think of the movie, the Idris Elba flick?
I didn't hate it like the rest of the world, because I tried to look at it, and I think I read somewhere that this was actually kind of the thought behind it, was that it's essentially a book 8, and if you know, like, if you've read the series,
yes.
you understand
okay.
how that's, you know, possible, and how that
yeah.
makes sense. But at the same time, you know, if you've read the series, then you're probably not going to like the movie because,
right.
you know, where are these characters, you know, and,
yeah.
you know, why do we try to wrap the whole thing up in one film when, you know,
right.
like, you know, where's my giant robot bear, you know,
mm-hmm.
where's,
yeah, thank you.
Where's
oh my
Blaine
God.
The Train
yeah.
that's such a pain,
where,
you know?
Where is Susanna? That's all I'm saying.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's, you know, where's Eddie? You know, it's, you know, I want to, where's the rose, you know? And I get it. And that's, you know, and that's one of those things, that project spent so long in developmental hell that it just kept getting
right.
whittled down
yeah,
and whittled
it just
down.
Couldn't,
and whittled
it
down.
Couldn't be done justice. Yeah. Yeah.
yeah. Well,
but,
well
I mean,
you know,
I've always said Idris Elba can read me the phone book and I will pay $10 for it. I don't care.
Right.
Hey, I'm straight and I would listen. Yeah, Idris is
right.
one of my top actors out there.
Absolutely.
And I would love to see him continue with that character. I would just like to see the full story.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean,
know,
I thought he was great as Roland. I know there was a big flack about, you know, him being cast as Roland, but I thought he was incredible as the character. You know, the script writing was, you know, meh, but he
yeah.
embodied that character, and
yeah,
yeah, and that's what I liked
well,
about
it. And
I
actually thought McConaughey did a solid job too.
Oh,
you know,
absolutely.
He had that swagger.
I'd be fine with that.
Yeah. But again, you know, they just didn't give him enough to work with, I think.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I would love to see, and I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but the guy who's directing Dune and who did Blade Runner 2040, I would love to see
yeah.
him
okay.
take on Dark Tower.
I
think that guy is just going to keep emerging as, you know, as a bigger name.
He's one
name
of my favorite
bigger
directors
influence.
Working today.
Oh, he's phenomenal. I think he could go down in history up there with guys like Christopher Nolan.
David
you know,
Lynch.
He
no, that's the old
and
one.
I'm,
sorry.
I'm hoping Dune really kind of puts his name, you know, on in,
oh,
you know, in
I,
the on public lips.
I am
who
so
is it?
Psyched
Who's doing
about
it?
This Dune.
It's the same guy who did Blade Runner 2049.
That's not helping me. Dennis Villeneuve. Dennis Villeneuve.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wanna circle back around real quick. Thomas More, he posted in the chat room the tweet that he just sent to James Patterson. I'd like to read it out to you guys if that's okay. He says, at James Patterson, at author Nathan Day, just called you out a popular radio show as being a hack. Get wrecked. Hashtag stir the pot. Love it. Love it.
Oh, man.
So you'll never have to worry about working with James.
Right.
Hey, James might reply, be like, who are you people?
Exactly. Hey, he can just take it as in I'm grumpy because I took his master class and didn't win the contest attached to it.
There you
so,
go. That's right. Well, and like
actually,
I said, Go ahead. I'm sorry. No, I was just going to ramble on about social media again because I know a lot of people complain about, oh, we're all caught up in social media. I, for one, as like the Generation X poster child, am thrilled that we live in the age of social media because, like, I can tweet directly to, you know, like Thomas More can tweet directly to James Patterson. You know, like I tweeted to Neil Gaiman, and he has actually replied.
Yeah, and Nathan is really happy about that right now too.
And I have like died on my living room floor because I got a hi or a thank you from Neil Gaiman, and I'm like, oh, you know, because when I was growing
That's
up, you
awesome.
Had to write a fan letter, and if you got anything back, you died on your living room floor, and you know, and it was always like 6 months later if it was ever so. You know, an immediate response from our favorite celebrities is amazing. So.
Yeah, hey, Thomas. Thomas, you asked James Patterson if he's got an Author Academy Award. What?
There you go. Booyah.
Although James Patterson could, you know, like probably buy about a billion trophies. You know, so.
Yeah, but can he earn them?
Hey, you know, and that's the thing. I would like to state for the record, I never called James Patterson a hack. What I said was that what I said is he is a commercial author.
And there's no shame in that. There is no shame in that.
And I'll give – this is one thing I'll give James Patterson credit for, to the best of my knowledge. It seems like he really helps other authors kind of get out there, you know, where you always see these – you know, almost everything he pushes out is co-authored. And now I have no idea how that works, you know, but at least it's giving these other people a chance to be – you know, to get their names out there, to have bestsellers that hopefully builds their career. You know, so kudos
know
to him for that.
Works.
And he was a master class.
Well, the master class didn't
exactly.
get that. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to take that master class. I think I ended up paying bills, though.
Right. There was a more recent masterclass that from another author that I was real curious about, and I can't remember her name. But there's some really good ones out there, Rebecca, that I think you should look into.
Yeah. I know
Neil Gaiman does
one
that
I want to say Margaret Atwood has one, and I would take that one. I would take the Margaret Atwood one.
That's who I was thinking of, Margaret Atwood. Yeah.
Yeah. She's the Handmaid's Tale author. Yeah, and I feel bad they're going to take away my feminist author cred because I've actually never read anything she's written. I have
what
a copy of The Handmaid's Tale. I've just never read it.
Hey, I've got copies of so many books that I haven't read. You know, like I've got books that I may never read, but I bought them because I love the author and I want to support
exactly.
that author.
Exactly.
Sort of like Knife Tale.
Hey, the Japanese have a name for that.
Hey, no, I am going to read Knife Tale and Victorian Ketchup. I've just, my backlog is huge, and I am a very slow reader. I'm,
I'm actually in the middle of Cosmic Egg Rapture by Rob Hoff, and I've been on it for a while, and I love Rob. It's just I am, and this is, you know, we were kind of talking earlier about you know, I was kind of talking about some of my flaws. I am just the consummate start and stop guy. I am hot and cold. I am so passionate, and I love this idea I have, and I'm going to get on it. And 2 days later, I do this spiral, and I, you know, can't – I sit around, and I can't get myself started on anything. And, you know, and so – and that bleeds over into everything. You know, that's in, that bleeds over into my reading, into my writing. And so I, if you guys don't mind me asking, do any of you kind of suffer from that, you know, from difficulty with motivation and focus? And if so, can I get some advice?
I wouldn't know anything about that.
Are we creatives?
Yeah.
In other words, yes.
I don't know if you heard the, I don't know if you were listening to the preamble here, Nate, before you got on, but
I missed it. I'm sorry.
No, that's I mean, I've been in that for a while now with this book. It's like it goes in fits and spurts. It's like, you know, I'll be super productive one day, and then you know, I'm like going gangbusters, and then I suddenly go through this period where I think that everything I just wrote and just spent the last week writing is total crap.
Yes.
I know that feeling.
And then I go back through and I read it and I tweak it here and there. And I'm like, you know, it's not that bad. And
yep. Same.
And then I think we all, you know, I there's a lot of us out there that, you know, if we haven't been, you know, clinically diagnosed as,
schizophrenic?
ADHD?
No, well, not schizophrenic, but bipolar.
Bipolar, right.
Yeah,
that's
we're
new
skirting
word for
it.
Schizophrenic, though.
It's, I find it interesting how we all blurted out a different thing when he said, diagnosed with.
Well, guys, here's where I dropped the truth bomb and let you know. I actually called in. This is why Stephen is here. He asked me to call in as a counselor. And we're going to talk through your issues now. So it's great you're being on. I'm just kidding.
Okay.
I'm just here to
how
psychoanalyze
much time
all
do we
of
have?
You.
You're going to psychoanalyze me?
Somebody was.
Hey. Go ahead, Michael.
Texted me earlier today and said that they needed to take a mental health day, and I said, you know what? I need more than one.
Hey,
be careful what you wish for, because some of us are
right. Like,
that's all we have is mental health days.
And you know what's funny about that? Like, when Tennessee first went into lockdown and got the word that, you know, that my work was closing down and we were all being furloughed, a part of me thought initially, okay, you know, we're looking at probably a month. I'm going to get so much done. You know, I'm putting
right. Together
a... I'm putting together a Lovecraft anthology, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to get this all edited, and, you know, it's going to be ready to go, and I'm going to get, you know, this, you know, the Orphan Advent, the third book I'm working on. I'm going to, you know, nail. I'm just absolutely going to run through that. And I had all the time in the world, and I got so little done. And, you know, I spent more time fussing and fidgeting, you know, than doing anything productive. And so you're right. You know, sometimes that structure is what we need, I feel like, to kind of light our fires.
Yeah. Well, and plus, like, what we're going through, this isn't a vacation. I mean, we're not having ordinary time off of work. I mean, we're literally going through a global crisis, you know. And so even on the smallest level, that is going to affect our creative motivation, I think.
Yeah.
You know, because I've been feeling the same way. I'm like, I'm home. I'm, you know, I should be getting so much done, but I can't do anything with my kids. I can't put them anywhere. I can't send them next door to my elderly parents' house because we might be carriers, you know.
Right.
So I am getting nothing done. Like, yeah. I'm hitting them here and there, like once they're in bed, but that's about
parents.
It. Do what?
How old are your elderly parents?
They're in their late 70s.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, they're still kicking. They're fine, but, you know. My mom's going to kill me because she'll be like, no, I am middle-aged. I'm like, okay, Mom. I am middle-aged. But I hope they don't listen to the show.
Somebody posted something the other day where it was a picture of a rotary phone. It says, if you know what this is, you need to be staying home because you're a high risk.
Right. You're in the high risk group.
Yeah.
I love it. Yep.
Or a cassette with a pencil.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Hiding under an elementary school desk to escape the nuclear bomb. Yep.
Yeah. We actually did that, so I don't know.
I know. Because that will work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Building around you is not going to protect you, but that, you know, that little wooden desk is solid.
For the last 2 seconds of your life, you're going to feel like you've done something.
Wow,
this turned dark. I'm
sorry.
Put
your knees and kiss your ass goodbye.
Always love the old, you know, like the cartoons where everything else would be blown up, but there'd be that desk and there'd be just this pillar of earth underneath.
Right.
Why, you know, it's kind of like the whole black box joke, you know, why don't they make the whole plane out of the black box, or why don't they make the whole school out of the desktop, you know?
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, if a plane's ever going down, you'll find me wrapped around that black box.
That's awesome.
So what's what, you know, Michael, I know you're continuing with your series. Rebecca, Daniel, what are you guys working on?
Go ahead, Rebecca.
Well, it's hard to say. I'm working on the sequel for Rising Ash. I'm working on the sequel, hoping to have it out by July in time for Imaginarium, if/when
Yay.
That happens. So, working on that. Got a couple of other. Oh yeah, I have a new Etsy shop as well. It's called Apocalypse by RG. And I'm selling decorative face masks, face coverings.
Very cool.
Yeah, and it's through Printful. Like, it's not, you know, I'm nothing handmade or anything, but it's through Printful, which, you know, and then I design the patterns and stuff.
Awesome.
That's what I'm doing right now.
I will share that link.
So, okay, cool. And I was going to ask you, like, as a fellow Etsy person, like, what are your thoughts on, like, handmade items versus print-on-demand items, like Printful or Printify or whatnot?
Well, I mean, all my stuff is made to order.
Right.
You know, okay. I don't make, you know, batches of popcorn until, you know, somebody wants them. the biggest, and I'm not totally familiar with, what'd you say, print? What were the last two terms
Printful.
You threw out? Print something?
Like, Printful. Printful.
Printful. What? I'm not familiar with Printful.
It's like it's a print on demand. You remember back in the day when they had Cafe Press?
Not so much.
Sorry. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Whippersnappers yell now.
Remember earlier when I said I'm sheltered? I would love to weigh in on your question, but I don't have enough knowledge to weigh in on your question. I'm sorry.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah.
We have about 15 minutes left in the regular show, and before we get too much further, I would like for Nathan to give where we can find him the most.
Okay. My You know, I tried the Twitter game and just was getting no traction, so I kind of gave that up. So the two best places to follow me are absolutely Instagram. You can find me there at author Nathan Day, and you can find me on Facebook. You can find me by using at author Nathan Day on Facebook as well for my author page, or just if you just want to check out my personal page, it's just Nathan Day. There's a picture of my big bald head with some posters in the background. I will friend anybody until you decide you're just going to be an absolute word I won't say on social media, you know. I'll friend anybody who understands how to be a respectful human being. So, but I absolutely love kind of mixing up with
you've
people
got a dozen
on social
friends.
Media. What's that? I've got a dozen
got
friends.
A
is that what you said? Well, I mean, it's really just you three.
And none
and,
of them
you know,
are us.
Yeah, I get
Patterson.
No. I have a feeling I've been unfriended there, you know. you know, this will be my 15 minutes. My 15 minutes will come when James Patterson, you know, puts back out like some kind of real like clever snapback, and then I just put out something stupid ghetto. You know, and that will forever be, you know, I'm the guy who got stupid ghetto with James Patterson. So.
Yeah. Well, that's legit.
We can just get
like
in a Twitter
my...
war with him.
There you go.
Right. No
now,
such thing as bad press, right?
One of my best stories ever is when Neil Gaiman insulted me, like, in person. And it's, like, one
what?
Of my favorite things that has ever happened to me.
What,
it was at a book
now,
signing, so it wasn't like in the wild. I wasn't like, "Hey, Neil," and he was like, "You're up, whatever. Screw you." No, that's not.
Oh,
what happened.
No. Okay. Come on. Tell this. I gotta hear it.
Okay. Well, it was at a book signing, and this was for American Gods, which was his first novel after the Sandman comics. I don't know if y'all
mm-hmm.
familiar with his work or not, but anyway. So, and I, being the consummate goth girl back in the day, went to the signing dressed up like Death, which is this character from his comic books, who is
right.
this, you know, kind of happy goth girl, teenage, black hair, lipstick, everything. So I dressed up as this character. And, you know, I was like, I'm so edgy and original. And I show up, and, like, there's, like, at least a dozen, if not more, girls dressed exactly the same. You know, and because, you know, it's a popular character. And there are other people dressed up as other characters from the comics and whatnot. But I was like, that's okay. I'm a unique, special flower, and I'm going to talk to Neil Gaiman. So so we go up in the line, and he takes the book. And, of course, he, you know, and this is, like, back when, yeah, I mean, he's still the deal, but this is, like, he was the deal. But so he takes the book. He goes to sign it, and I'm standing there with this, like, goofy ass grin on my face, and he looks up and he looks me full on straight up and down, like eyes slowly up and slowly down, and then he looks me straight in the eye and he says, "Well, I've never seen that one before," and then he leans down to sign the book, and I was like, "Ah!" I was like, happiest day of my life. So yeah, that's the story of the time that Neil Gaiman insulted
wow.
me.
Hey, I just want to put this out there to the world and to any listeners. If 100 of you want to show up at a book signing of mine dressed as Sylvie Crandall, I will personally hug every single one of you and thank you. And every time I will act like it's the first time I've seen it and just be like Mr. Giggly. So, I, you know, that.
Challenge accepted.
I mean, oh, yes. I mean, that's, you know, that's kind of a. I hope I never get to a point, and Rebecca, you know me better than anybody, you know, that's, you know, out of this group. If I ever get to a point where I seem anything less than utterly flattered and excited that somebody likes something I've done enough to incorporate it into their personal life in some way, I sit me down on a plunger with the, you know, with the pole sticking up, you know. put
Fair
me
enough.
In my place.
And this is recorded, so this will live in infamy forever.
Yes.
So if you ever get to
yes.
that point, I will just replay this clip of this podcast for you, and just I'll just have it on like on a loop on a handheld recorder, and just like hold it out to you, and play it.
And you will be smiling with a plunger in hand. I know you will.
Yep. Yep. And the same for me as well. So.
Absolutely.
I mean, omit the plunger, but everything else you can. Right.
Oh, no, you're getting a plunger. Plunger's part of the deal, darn it.
All right, I'll just stay humble and we won't have to worry about it.
There we go.
I've got one question for the two of y'all. How did y'all actually meet?
two words.
We met on a planet. We met on a whole other planet. A zombie.
It was a planet called Zombie Planet.
Yes. Years ago, and you know,
many
and anybody
ago.
Who's listening, who's involved with the Kentucky film scene, they may want to try to fight me on this one, but they can't. Zombie Planet is the film that started the Kentucky film scene.
It's true.
Now,
it's true.
It is. So a guy mm-hmm. named George Manila was in Lexington, Kentucky, and he started a, just kind of a grindhouse zombie film. And
mm-hmm.
at the time, I was working with a band called Spent and trying to create an indie record label. And so I heard about this from a guy I was working with at the time. His former roommate was one of the producers of the film. So I got in touch with them, and I started talking to them about getting involved with the, you know, basically spearheading the soundtrack. Rebecca actually auditioned and became one of the lead actresses in the film. And so so she went on to, you know, shine in that. And we both worked with George. You were on Dance with the Vampire as well, correct?
Well, briefly. Yeah, I wasn't. I was like a day. I was a day character, yeah.
Okay. So we met doing independent film.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually kind of lost touch for probably, what, a good 10 years?
Yeah.
Maybe?
Well, it was until
not
last year, but the year before, Imaginarium is when we reconnected. So, yeah.
Yep. So,
I knew you were writing, and I was writing, and so we were like, hey, we're mm-hmm. writers. And then when we, you know, we just, like, reconnected at Imaginarium. Oh.
Yeah. I love that our lives took kind of similar paths in that.
It's true.
Aspect.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought of that.
Yeah.
So is this a movie that we
Rising
can find
hasn't
on
won any awards
YouTube
yet,
or something?
But we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. I don't know if it's available on YouTube. I know that George Manila actually owns and runs a multitude of Roku channels. So you might
we're
be able
not,
to find it
we're
on the Roku
We're not plugging this movie. We're not. Nope.
Yes.
You can't find it anywhere.
I just want to see the Dave Westman, you know, career
well, you
package.
Won't, I don't think you actually see me in it. I was the understudy for the lead in that, but I was never needed. So I was put in another scene.
Yeah, you had a part in that, didn't you?
I shot one scene where we were burning zombie bodies in a flashback that was supposed to show the beginning of the plague, but it didn't make the cut.
Right.
Yeah. Now in the next film you did, which was a vampire film, I had a much bigger role.
Yeah.
And if you watch, you can see my hair grow in the span of 30 minutes. You can watch my hair grow about 6 months.
Hey, the same thing happens in The Wizard of Oz.
See,
Dorothy's hair goes from like shoulder length to like boob length at one point, like in the same within
and
5 and then back again. So she has like bouncy up, yeah, like that, like
and,
the Barbie doll.
That's why
her back, her back, and her hair goes back into her head.
That's why I did it. It was an homage. I'm a genius.
Yes. You are. There you go.
Yes. Suck that, James Patterson.
Exactly right. You and Judy Garland are right there together.
Right.
Class.
I will be the next gay icon, I guess.
What do you mean will be? Mm-hmm.
If I'm ever an icon of anything, I don't think it'll be something respected. So,
well,
I'll be,
tell us, where can we find this delicious popcorn that we hear so much about?
Well, you can. I've got a Poplet Chalk Corn page on Facebook.
Okay.
It's P-O-P-L-A-T-E. So it looks like Pop Late, but basically what it's – the name is essentially as if a kid were trying to say chocolate popcorn and messed up and switched the first two syllables of each. So it's Poplet Chalk Corn, but again, spelled Pop Late Chalk Corn, which is C-H-O-C-C-O-R-N. And you
That's
can find me you can find me on Etsy through that as well, or the direct Etsy store address is etsy.com/shop/popletchalkcorn.
Very good.
Etsy.com/shop. I'm typing it in, even though I already know how to get there. Poplet.
So when you get there, you're going to see four different options. But when you go into there, when you start going through the flavors, you're going to see that I have dozens of flavor options. So I've got bourbon, I've got blueberry, I've got caramel apple, you know, butterscotch.
You given Stephen any of the bourbon?
I'm making him some. I'm going to make Stephen some bourbon. And actually, for Tony, I'm going to make some cinnamon bourbon. Kind of
I have to ask.
Fireball.
Yeah.
I have to ask as a person with high cholesterol, do you have a sugar-free Poplet Chalk Corn option?
I do not. I'm just that stuff I want to look into in the future. I'm just very much just kind of getting the ball rolling.
Yeah, I know.
But I
but
do
that would be cool.
I do definitely
do a sugar-free option.
Yeah, I want to look into that, and I want to make sure, you know, that I have, like, you know, options for, you know, certain allergies and stuff like that. You know, I want to try to cater to everybody.
Cool, yeah.
I'm just admittedly not there yet. So,
that's
but
very
it's,
cool.
It's definitely the thought is there.
Well, we are
okay.
We are down to the
I
last
mean, I know
couple
I've
minutes of the show.
Of bags last year. Sorry, go ahead.
We're down to the last couple minutes of the show, and appreciate everybody being here tonight, and appreciate Nathan taking out his time to talk with us. And RG,
I'm honored. Thank
you. You know, taking out her time and everything to be a guest host on here. And
always a pleasure.
I'll let you know each one of y'all say good night and everything, and I'll close it out.
Rebecca, you want to start?
Okay, sure. You can find me at www.rgwesterman.com. You can find my Etsy store is Apocalypse by RG on Etsy. You can find my ASMR channel on YouTube called Spooky Tingles ASMR. Go check it out. And then I have, yeah, but everything is linked to my website, rgwesterman.com.
Awesome. Michael, what about you?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, under By Michael West, B-Y Michael West, and you'll see me in my many, many forms.
Okay, now I'm expecting cosplay, just so you know.
All right, so we will be back next week with another fabulous guest, and until then, I hope everybody can be creative. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.